we're so used to seeing things that, in my opinion, aren't quite right in our treatment of animals.
Yeah, the less we eat, the less violence is being done, and the less destruction to the environment.
Everyone eats, and everyone has to make a moral decision every time that we sit down to the table.
Welcome to the Animal Voices Show, Western Canada's only radio program on animal advocacy and compassionate living. This is CFRO 100.5 FM, Co-op Radio, Vancouver, Canada. Today is Friday, October 19th, 2018. For the next hour, I'm your host, Jen Dobell, and I'm joined in studio by my co-host, Allison Cole.
Hi there.
Today's show is brought to you by Edible Planet, a Vancouver-based education campaign and TV series to teach people about the world's most powerful edible plants and the fascinating people who bring them to market. Food is the world's most powerful tool to share the wealth, end chronic illness, regreen the planet, and create lasting world peace today. Now is the time for a plant-based economy because on our big, beautiful edible planet, the food we eat can change the world. While doing animal rights and vegan outreach, I'm often confronted with the argument that human rights issues are more important than animal rights. And what many people don't understand is that these issues are interconnected. Slaughterhouse workers are some of the most exploited employees, and there's a documented evidence of employees being subject to PTSD, becoming violent toward family members when they were previously nonviolent, developing suicidal tendencies, being underpaid, being exposed to dangerous inhalants and machinery, large animals who are trying to escape their fate, and in some circumstances, staff in slaughterhouses even wear diapers on shift as there's no one to cover their position on a production line. This even happens in Canada. Many people are surprised to hear this. So on today's show, we'll be interviewing Calvin Neufeld, an independent speaker, writer, thinker, and social justice advocate, transgender vegan, as well as an advocate of life and quality of life for oppressed species, for sexual and gender minorities, racial minorities, the physically, mentally, and economically disadvantaged, and absolutely everybody else. Along with his mother, Calvin advocates for prisoners and animals on the issues of prison farms with their campaign, Evolve Our Prison Farms, which advocates plant-based prison agriculture enhanced by farm animal sanctuary as a non-violent and non-exploitative model of prisoner animal therapy. It's their belief that Canada's prison farms should model health, environmental sustainability, and offer compassion-based rehabilitation. The Canadian government is currently establishing prison dairy operations, ignoring all evidence against animal agriculture as a rehabilitative model. And the dairy operation will see prisoners inseminating animals, separating mothers and babies, and sending animals to slaughter. So please stay tuned for that interview in 10 minutes' time.
And Allison, you have a message for one of our regular listeners?
I certainly do. I want to give a birthday wish to Patrick Bainton, who celebrated his birthday yesterday on Thursday, October the 18th. And the reason why I want to recognize Patrick today is because I just want to celebrate how much activism he's been doing lately. And I just want to recognize that. I don't know if you know this, Jen, but I know you've made so many people vegan. Well, guess what? Patrick one day told me after I knew he had been vegan for about, I don't know, a year or so, he just sort of like gently let me know. And he told me, well, it's because of you. Like, because of me, he's awesome. Vegan. Yeah, and then he started the Vegans of UBC group last year at the University of British Columbia. He's not even a student, and he started it.
With all the Canada Goose jackets around UBC, I'm glad there's a UBC vegan.
He's going to be attending the aquarium demo today, too, he said. So, anyway, so I wanted to give a shout-out to Patrick. Thank you for everything you do. We appreciate it so much. Also, today is the start of our member drive, our fall member drive, which is October the 19th to the 29th. So that starts today, and you might wonder, what is our fall member drive? But did you know that Vancouver Co-op Radio is all volunteer run, and we rely on supporter donations to keep our shows on the air? So Animal Voices has to raise a certain amount of money every year in order to keep the message going. So what is the member drive? This is a time of year where we really do ask people, supporters, if you're listening to the show, if you enjoy our show every week, if you tune into the podcast sometimes, if you appreciate what we do, please show us your support this year by joining us. And we are a co-op. You can just give us a donation. It's a tax receivable if you live in Canada. The mandate of our show, in case you're not familiar, is we report every week on current animal advocacy issues, animal rights issues, just issues that support animals and what they're facing these days. We also promote a compassionate vegan lifestyle. So that's what we're here every week doing. So I know as a producer and longtime member, I've been on the show now for 9 years. And Jen, for you, it's been a couple years, right?
Two or three.
Yeah, yeah. Two or three. So for me, I have so many good memories of past shows that I've done, but I wanted to let you know as well, like, we're really community-minded. Not only our podcast does broadcast internationally because we're on the internet, and you can also hear us via live streaming at cooperadio.org during the show, but we do focus on a lot of local issues. And Jen, I wonder if you could highlight some of the local people who we've had on this show who are doing great work for the animals.
Absolutely. We've had animal rights lawyer Anna Pippis of Animal Justice, and that organization is fighting for the legal rights of animals and trying to create new laws to protect animals all across Canada. And I'm often recommending them as someone to donate to as well, because changing our laws is really very helpful to help on as far as, you know, making big change for animals. That's, I think, the best way. You can go on our website, animalvoices.org, and listen to many interviews that we've done with Anna Pippis. And another person we've had on the show on a regular basis is local filmmaker Gary Charbonneau. He made the film Vancouver Aquarium Uncovered, and his next documentary will be about animals that are tested on in labs to find cures for human diseases and how that actually does not work. And we've had interviews on that topic as well. You can find that on animalvoices.org. We also feature local activists, and Jeff Regeer, an undercover investigator with Mercy for Animals, who's now retired from that job, but his interview was actually quite interesting, as a lot of people don't think that we treat animals badly in our slaughterhouses. And we also bust the humane myth that many people still believe in. You know, a lot of people are making that choice to buy humane animal products, but as you'll learn on our show, it really doesn't exist.
So I wanted to talk about some of the past favorite shows that I have been a part of producing, and Jen and I were talking in the car on the way here, and I was telling you, Jen, that I want to highlight, like, all the last shows I've done, because I really put my heart and soul into everything that we do. Mm-hmm. I think the last show I produced was to promote the film Sharkwater, the film of the late Rob Stewart, who is this wonderful Canadian activist and filmmaker who unfortunately passed away last year, but his legacy still lives on, because we're able to have him on the show, or have his friends on the show, I should say, and that film actually opens today nationwide in theaters if people want to see it. But that to me was a really meaningful interview. We had Julie Anderson and Brock Cahill on the show. They're involved with the film, and they spoke to us about, you know, just these issues to do with shark conservation and why we should care about sharks and why it's important. And we were able to give that message a platform. Also, the week before that, we had just interviewed the filmmaker of another great film that has just come out. It's called Dominion. And have you seen that yet, Jen, by the way?
Yeah.
Okay, yes.
Mm-hmm.
So that's that was made by Chris Delforce. He's an Australian filmmaker, but this film has a global impact. It really just affects everyone on the earth, and it's about all the different ways that we use and abuse animals in this world, and it's very applicable to everyone. So we were having a film screening in Vancouver about this, of this film, and I wanted to highlight the director to speak about what his film is about. And I want to say another past favorite show that I had, that it was incorporated with an event that we sponsored, was Earthling Ed. That was in the summer.
Mm-hmm.
That was one of the most fun activist weeks of my life. I hope you will agree, Jen. You joined me here in the studio, and we had an hour-long conversation with Earthling Ed about his pragmatic and effective animal advocacy that he takes all over the world. Mm-hmm. And that was joined with a film screening of his film, The Land of Hope and Glory, and a talk that he gave that week that we co-hosted with Liberation BC.
I actually had a friend go vegan from listening to Ed's talk that night.
I know you did.
So we are change makers here, and not just our show. Many shows on Co-op Radio are creating social change, and that's another reason to donate. If you can just give $5 a month, that actually means a lot to us.
Yes, and that's actually what I do. So we really promote and encourage sustaining memberships, and that's all you do is you go to cooperadio.org, or you can call the radio station. I'll give that number in a minute, and you go to click on the donate button. And you can donate just however much you want per month, and that gives us reliable income for the whole year so that we know that we're going to meet our goal in advance, which then like gives us more time to actually work on making the programming content that we work so hard to do. And remember, as I said, this is all volunteer run. Mm-hmm. So so if you want a phone as well, you can make a donation. It can be just a one-time donation as well. The phone number to call is 604-684-8494. Once again, that's 604-684-8494. And Brian is answering the phones. And I want to say thank you so much to our first donor, Leanna Picard, my sister. She did a Facebook fundraiser for her birthday, and she raised over $300 for us, which she has donated to the station today.
I love Leanna. Thank you so much. And I just want to say one more thing. Something that's new with Co-op Radio is we are able to do advertisements for ethically minded businesses or nonprofit organizations. So if you're interested in being having an advertisement for your organization on our show, please contact us at animalvoices.org.
Calvin Neufeld is an independent speaker, writer, thinker, and social justice advocate living in Perth, Ontario. A vegan transsexual, Calvin is an advocate for life and quality of life for oppressed species, for sexual and gender minorities, racial minorities, the physically, mentally, and economically disadvantaged, and absolutely everybody else. Calvin is the lead organizer of Kingston Veg Fest, director of Suffering Eyes Project, supporting farmed animal sanctuaries, and the founder of Evolve Our Prison Farms, campaigning for innovative agriculture and compassion-based rehabilitation on Canada's prison farms. Welcome to the show, Calvin.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, I'm having you on the show to talk about the exploitation of prisoners and the organization Evolve Our Prison Farms. But before we get to that topic, I just want to say that I spent last night looking at your website, calvinneufeld.com, and you're such an interesting, inspirational person. You tell your story best. So I want to give our listeners a brief overview of your unique life growing up, as I feel that this has played a part in your compassionate personality and perhaps your passions in life to date.
Oh, thank you very much. That's very kind of you to say. I suppose I have had an interesting life. I was born female, genetically female, and I was, you know, raised in a good home, good parents, a conservative Christian upbringing in the Mennonite tradition. So rather conservative and, you know, church-based life and Christian upbringing, and I never felt like a girl. That was sort of a bit a source of a lot of difficulty for me, and in the teen years, you know, a lot of suffering and angst and self-hatred as a result of who I was. But then emerging as an adult and coming to terms with who I was and coming out as a trans person and marrying my partner, you know, and just building a life out of, you know, the rubble of a life that didn't go according to plan. And I guess that maybe that did have a large part in shaping who I am and my priorities in life. Basically, the only thing I care about is making life better. And the work that I do now, generally speaking, for the last 7 or 8 years, has been doing education around sexual and gender diversity. I go into schools, high schools, universities, or talk to community groups. I give talks on LGBT stuff, or even on issues such as bullying or suicide. Some of the difficult topics that I feel are important to have conversations around, all in that spirit of trying to make life better. I wear a t-shirt when I give my talks, and it says, "I don't care." And that was sort of a hand-me-down t-shirt, and I just put it on for my first talk, and it just kind of stuck because it goes down to, you know, we spend so much of our life caring about things that don't actually matter, and what are the things that do matter? And to me, that's life and quality of life. And everything else doesn't matter, and we can let go of so many things that cause us stress and pain and grief. My next talk, I plan on it being on the subject of forgiveness, because we get caught up on that, struggling to forgive things that have happened in life, things that other people have done, things that we have done ourselves, for example. So it's just about making life better. That's the only thing that I care about. And I suppose that did form a foundation for my work now with the Suffering Eyes Project, with Evolve Arbors and Farms, and Kingston Veg Fest as well.
So Evolve Our Prison Farms is a campaign that you and your mother started 2 years ago. Can you tell us how that idea came up and about the campaign?
Yeah, well, it came up. The prison farms, it's sort of a long history. Prison farms in Canada, they existed for a long time. In 2010, about, there were six federally funded prison farms still in operation, and the Harper Conservative government decided to shut down the prison farm program federally. So all of the prison farms were shut down. This sparked a community resistance in little pockets across Canada, but the resistance was greatest in Kingston, Ontario, which is sort of called the penitentiary capital of Canada because of the high concentration of prisons in Kingston. And the people in Kingston, particularly farmers, were offended at the idea that the government was saying that these agricultural programs did not teach employable skills. That was the government's excuse for shutting them down, although many people believe it was part of their larger move to appear tough on crime, part of that tough on crime agenda. So people didn't like the closing of the farms. They resisted it. They saw it as the government just making a bad move. And a lot of people got involved just because they saw people coming together and the community coming up to stand up for something and stand up in defense of something. So a lot of people weren't involved as a group called Save Our Prison Farms. They didn't want the prison farms shut down. And a large part of the motivation was to protect the farmland. In Kingston, there were two prison farms, and there were about 1,500 acres of prime agricultural farmland. And people didn't want to see that farmland sold off and potentially built over. So they saw it as democracy, justice, local food security, and that's what they were defending. And then a lot of years went by, and the farms remained shut down because their campaign ultimately was unsuccessful to save the farms. And then in 2016, the Canadian government decided, you know what, we're going to bring the farms back, or at least look into the possibility of bringing the farms back. And they began a public consultation process, inviting input from Canadians. And that's when my mother and I got involved. We heard about this, and I used to live in Kingston, right next to one of the prison farms, actually. And so we felt like, oh, okay, they're actually talking about bringing back dairy farms. Well, we actually have a really good idea, an alternative to that former model. The farms used to have up to 300 cows producing dairy. The milk was served, was processed on site and served into prisons for prisoners to consume the milk. There were also as many as 10,000 or more chickens at one of the prison farms. So a really concentrated, nearing factory level farming for the chickens, but the eggs were also served into prisons. And what's happening now with the farms coming back is nothing like what happened in the past. They are not going to be serving food into prisons at all. So it's very, very problematic. And since 2016, my mother and I, starting Evolve Our Prison Farms, thinking about, hey, well, we've got a blank slate. What's the best possible model for these prison farms? And because she and I work with sanctuaries, supporting sanctuaries through the Suffering Eyes Project, we know the therapeutic potential of a sanctuary model of animal care. We're also highly aware of the problematic nature of dairy as a rehabilitative program through what the government is calling animal therapy. This is not animal therapy. It's highly problematic because, as I'm sure your listeners are aware, the production of milk requires forced insemination, the removal of babies and taking the milk, and then the early slaughter of dairy animals as their milk productivity declines and they're no longer profitable units. So this just isn't a form of animal therapy, and we don't see it as having rehabilitative benefits either, or even employability because the dairy sector is in decline and it's heavily automated. So why are we introducing a dairy program to prisons with the goal of increasing prisoner employability or improving rehabilitative programming or offering animal therapy? It just doesn't make sense. But a sanctuary model of animal care, complementing an innovative plant-based agricultural program, would have high benefits to prisoners, to society, to the environment, and of course to the animals themselves. So we have put forward that proposal since 2016. We have met with government at every level. We have had meetings with Corrections Canada and CORCAN, which is the programming branch that would be running the farms. We've had meetings with everybody that we could reach out to and done everything in our power. And unfortunately, we have not been successful in getting the government to recognize the value of what we've proposed. And instead, they are moving forward with really a truly terrible plan.
Well, do you think that this all comes down to money because they want to help these farmer co-ops that would be providing the animals? What possible reason would they have to not go with a sanctuary model that would be more healing for people in prison who are very likely traumatized from a bad past, perhaps?
People seem to think that, well, it must come down to money. The farms have to be profitable, and so you can't just have animals on a sanctuary basically being a financial drain. But that's a false scenario. It's not as simple as that. The fact is that dairy production is not a moneymaker. Animal agriculture is not a moneymaker. Mm-hmm. It relies on heavy subsidization in order for it to be viable. And the dairy industry, like I said, is in decline. Markets are drying up. And the idea that it would cost, we don't need animal agriculture for a farm to make money. They got 1,500 acres, and with some innovative agricultural techniques and green technologies, this can actually, plant-based markets are booming. So you could very easily make money, and very good money, with just an intelligent use of those 1,500 acres of land. And then if you are introducing animals as animal therapy, then the least the government can do for animals used in a government animal therapy program is to provide for their care. We should not be requiring that the animals also pay for their care with their bodies, their lives, their babies. It's just, there is, in no other circumstance would we consider it ethical for a therapy animal to be killed at the end of its usefulness or eaten at the end of its usefulness. These are therapy animals. They're being used for prisoner therapy. And the other difference is that in order to have this dairy operation, let me just explain what the dairy operation is going to look like. In Kingston, they are going to introduce a goat dairy operation. They're beginning with 500 goats, with plans to scale up to as many as 1,500 goats, and the milk is going to be sold out to the Feha International Infant Formula Factory, which is in construction in Kingston as we speak, and is going to be processed into powdered infant formula and shipped to China. So as a premium baby food product that's going to sell for a very high price. So we're also trying to inform Chinese consumers that this premium infant formula product was actually sourced from a Canadian prison, in addition to hundreds of other farms in Canada. But it's just problematic, and the cost of building up the barns and housing upwards of 1,500 animals versus an animal sanctuary of, say, 30 cows. Because when the farms were shut down, the Save Our Prison Farms group started a co-op, the Penn Herd Co-op, and they purchased a portion of the former Penn Herd of cows, at which numbers now their descendants are about 30 cows, and we have been campaigning from the beginning, 2016. Yes, bring back the prison farms, make them innovative, make them relevant to rehabilitation, and make them sustainable environmentally, and let's bring back the Penn Herd to the Penn Herd Sanctuary. Let that be the animal therapy that we're offering. So the cost of caring for 30 of the descendants of the Penn Herd cows, which have become symbolic of the prison farm program and its happiest possible ending to this long prison farm story, the cost of caring for those 30 cows would pale in comparison to the cost of farming 1,500 goats. And now the government has agreed to bring in up as many as 60 milking cows as well. So the numbers just don't add up to think that it has to be animal agriculture in order for the program to make money.
Okay, so when you present this perfectly logical, flawless argument to them in a meeting, for example, what happens? I mean, how are they disagreeing with you? What are they saying to you?
Well, that's mystery. So we face two responses. No matter who we meet with or who we attempt to talk to, the response will be one of two things. One, no response. Or they won't speak to us, or they won't meet with us. Minister Goodell has refused. Minister Ralph Goodell, he is the Minister of Public Safety, who is in charge of the prison farm decision. He is really the only politician whose decision actually matters in this, and he's the only one who refuses to meet with us consistently. So either there are no responses to what we're putting forward, or the responses have nothing to do with the legitimacy of our proposal. It becomes a defense of dairy farming, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. And for example, the Prison Farm Advisory Panel, who has been appointed to advise Minister Goodell in the decision-making process, is comprised, four of the seven members are dairy, beef, and goat farmers. And when you address the panel, and all seven members of the panel are Save Our Prison Farm supporters who have been the prison dairy advocates back as far back as 2010. So that panel being set up in that way, and for us to have to come and present our proposal to a panel composed of dairy advocates, it becomes, the response is not to the legitimacy of our argument or to the benefits of our argument, but rather it becomes a defense of dairy and even a defense of that this is natural treatment of the animals or that they want to be impregnated. Or, it becomes quite a disturbing conversation.
Yeah.
And that is not, our government claims to be, to prioritize making evidence-based decisions. And we're not seeing any of that happen here. And so our campaign, which began as this beautiful vision and a really, really good idea in the right place at the right time, and instead, it has had to shift into a campaign of opposition to what the government is now doing. And it has become a much bigger story about democracy, about the failure of justice, and the failure of democracy, and the erasure of our voices, and the suppression of evidence in order to further the objective that it appears our government has had in the works all along. We believe that this, we can't prove it at this time. We are working to gather the proof and the evidence. We believe that this plan to produce dairy for Chinese infant formula has been the plan all along since the government began its process into reopening the prison farms.
You are listening to Animal Voices on Vancouver's Co-op Radio, 100.5 FM CFRO, 100% listener-sponsored radio broadcasting live from the east side on unceded Coast Salish territories.
So your group filed a complaint with the Federal Conflict of Interest and Ethics Commissioner over this issue of bringing back prison farms. Can you talk about that and bring us up to speed on the current status of the complaint?
Yes, that is relatively recent. And we felt that this was important because Minister Goodell appointed a panel, or somebody appointed a panel of advisors for this program. And the panel was composed exclusively of members of a single advocacy group, which, in our view, is a conflict of interest, and including a number of dairy farmers, which precludes consideration of other options outside of dairy. And, of course, the dairy industry has a powerful lobby with tremendous political influence. So there are just huge problems with the structure and process which preclude consideration of other options. And so we submitted a conflict of interest complaint to Commissioner Mario Dion, and we made out the argument based on the actual the Conflict of Interest Act. He was rather quick to get back to us, so that was good. Unfortunately, his response is that he cannot find evidence that it was Minister Goodell who appointed the panel, and as such, the Conflict of Interest Act would not apply to him, and that the members of the panel are not part of the decision-making process, according to him, and therefore they are not bound by the Conflict of Interest Act. We do not believe that that's where this ends.
No, of course not.
Yes, we actually have interest now from Animal Justice, which I'm sure, again, you and your listeners would be well aware of the fantastic work. Yes, so Animal Justice has expressed interest in helping us just to submit access to information requests, because there would be a paper trail for all of this. And we simply don't accept that Minister Goodell was not involved in the selection and or appointment of a panel. And regardless, I have asked CORCAN for confirmation who was responsible for appointing the panel, and they have not issued a response, which is unlike them. I have established a very good working relationship with CORCAN, and I do respect them, but there are some absences of information that can speak more loudly than any response that they might offer. So we are continuing to find out more information, get the evidence, follow the paper trails to find out exactly what is going on here. And I have to say, the longer we have been involved with this, the more disconcerting it becomes. And it almost begins to reek of conspiracy.
Yeah.
The government has been trying to pass this off as a feel-good public relations move in response to the Save Our Prison Farms efforts to see the prison farms come back, and this is not it. This is not what they were defending. They were not working. This is not democratic, this is not justice, and is not local food security. This is not about protecting the farmland and protecting local food. This is about using Canadian farmland to produce, essentially, an inefficient food product to be shipped around the world. And it's goats.
Yeah.
So we are continuing to fight this, but we're at a stage in the campaign where it's discouraging, it's disheartening, and we feel that we really are up against just a beast, an absolute juggernaut, more than one. We're up against corruption, we're up against the government, we're up against entrenched apathy, we're up against tradition and unquestioned expectations, we're up against farmers who have a personal investment in not recognizing the value of sanctuary over animal agriculture as animal therapy. And we're up against the public opinion that has only ever watched one side of the story, and the media that has only ever covered one side of the story. The prison farms were good, bring back the cows. That is the story you see everywhere in the media. And in fact, the Penherd cows, many of them are named after reporters who have covered the story. So the media is very, very closely committed to seeing the farms come back as dairy farms. And until we came along, nobody questioned this. So we were just up against one wall after another.
Yeah.
But we really do believe firmly that we will win this sooner or later, because there's truth and evidence and justice on our side. And what we've proposed is not turning the whole ship around. It's just a mild policy pivot. It's just a slight change of course that will have tremendous benefit for prisoners, for the animals, for the environment, for society, for reducing recidivism, reducing stigma towards prisoners. The idea of prisoners caring for animals in an uncompromised way while learning innovative techniques agriculturally, value-added skills of how to be sustainable and responsible towards our environment. It has all of the benefits. It would cost less. It is far more achievable, and it doesn't have these huge ethical problems of using Canadian prisoners to produce baby food for China.
Wow. Absolutely, you make such a perfect point. And because we are a vegan animal rights show, I would love to hear your story on you becoming vegan. Let's hear about your journey.
Well, it goes back over a decade, I suppose. I was vegetarian about 12 years ago. And that was, my wife was vegetarian, and I had studied it in university as well in an ethical ethics philosophy class, and it just made so much sense. From every perspective, it just made sense. So I did eventually go vegetarian, and then within months, I went vegan. Just, I realized, well, I need to just look at where food comes from, and if I can still eat it, at least I have a modicum of, you know, of respect for myself and my own ethics to just know where it's coming from. And of course, once you see where food comes from and everything that's associated with it, that was it for me. That was the change, and I just knew I could not. It wasn't making a conscious decision to change. It was just, it was a visceral shift, like a conversion.
Yeah.
I wanted nothing to do with it. And that was it. So from then on, I've been vegan. It's been about 11 years now. And love of food, my health, my happiness, my capacity for compassion. Before, there were limits. I had to put blinders on around certain things. And so I couldn't think about what life is like for that animal, or I couldn't think about just how far my compassion could extend until I became vegan and all the blinders fall away.
Yeah, wow. That's awesome. And I love that you're one of these vegans that is such a passionate advocate. I mean, some people just go vegan and that's it. And we call them plant-based foodies, us activists that are working our butts off for change. And we say it with resentment, but thank you for what you're doing. I mean, you're just above and beyond. And of course, we all want to help you with this campaign in any way that we can. I'm glad that you've got Animal Justice helping you. Like I said, we've had Anna Pippis on the show numerous times. She's amazing. So what can our listeners do to help right now?
Well, we currently have a petition that will be closing in November. So we're trying to push that. Our current petition, this is our third petition. I really mean it. We have tried everything. We have done everything conceivable. And we will continue to do so. So we have a petition that is currently up. You can find it to our website, evolveprisonfarms.ca. Sign the petition. It's being sponsored by Green Party leader Elizabeth May. Obviously, there are tremendous merits to taking an environmental approach to the prison farms. This is a model of what we can do in terms of agriculture and how we can solve environmental problems, social problems, and just uphold justice for prisoners and justice for animals and justice for the environment, all in one, this microcosm of the prison farms. Everything converges on it. We also have a postcard campaign to Minister Ralph Goodale that people can just sign and send postcards, postage free, to Minister Goodale, calling for prison sanctuary. And so you can order those through our website. We will send them to you for free and share them with your friends and send them in. We have over 10,000 postcards already on their way to Minister Goodale's office that the government can see. This isn't just a handful of people saying this. This is a national issue, and all of Canada should care, because when the farms were shut down, I mean, they had parliamentary hearings into how can we do this, is it okay to do this, and discussions at a national level when it came to closing the farms, and now reopening the farms and reopening them in this way, which raises serious questions about the ethics of prison labor, which is a hot topic right now with prison strikes going on in the U.S. and now in Canada against prison, essentially a prison slavery. So we can't afford to not have a conversation, not have a dialogue. But that's exactly what the government and the media have been shutting out. Any possibility for actual meaningful dialogue around this.
Mm-hmm.
And we're about to lose a tremendous opportunity to do something truly ethical, truly sustainable, life-affirming for the prisoners, for the animals involved. We need Canada to care.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we'll help you out with that. So again, that is evolveourprisonfarms.ca, correct?
That's right.
So I'd just like to get a bit of an idea, Calvin, on you've obviously sussed out the scene a little bit on what prisoners want to be doing. Do they want to be working in a sanctuary setting, or do they want to be working in a factory farm setting? Can you tell us how you've acquired information on their feelings toward this?
Yes, absolutely. Well, we definitely feel that prisoners' voices matter in this more than really than anybody else's. It most directly impacts them. So we have made many efforts to get prisoners talking and to find out what do they want. And we did a survey of prisoners in Kingston, the bulk of which were at Joyceville Institution, where the prison farms are beginning. And 72%, over 72%, voted for sanctuary as their top choice, and only 28% identified dairy as their preference for the prison farms. Many of the ones who indicated dairy also added no slaughter. We don't want animals to be slaughtered as part of the process, but unfortunately we know that that is a necessary component of a dairy operation. So you can't have dairy without slaughter as a part of it as well. So basically the vast majority of prisoners in Kingston and also at other institutions in Canada see the merits of a sanctuary model, and they see the benefits therapeutically and rehabilitatively, and there's also the question of why would we be doing dairy? Who's it for? If it's not to be producing food for prisons, why are we doing it? There's a strong sense of working for the man and making money for the man, but what's in it for me? That's sort of the overarching prisoner attitudes towards this, and that's another reason why sanctuary is just so much more advantageous, because they see that the benefits are for them and for the animals, but the therapy that they would receive from that has nothing to do with making money for the man. So we've done the surveys of the prisoners. We also have some correspondence with prisoners as well, and really developing some relationships there. And many of them, you know, have said that it has opened their eyes and just changed the way that they think about it. And for a lot of prisoners, they just were not aware that this was happening at all. It's very hard to get information in or out of prisons.
Yeah, I'm impressed with the work you're doing. And you mentioned that you've heard from a couple of prisoners who are vegetarian and who want to see your vision become reality, and even meat-loving prisoners who see the merits of a sanctuary. That's amazing.
Absolutely. Everybody can. This is not about telling prisoners what they should or shouldn't eat or what prisons should or should not serve to prisoners. This is about a rehabilitation program and what would be the most effective form of rehabilitation. And it's about animal therapy and what is the most effective form of animal therapy. Dairy is neither rehabilitative nor therapeutic. And the prisoners can see that. Even if they're devout meat eaters, we've had some prisoners begin a conversation with, look, I'm dead set against what you guys are about. And by the end of the conversation, they see that this is not only good for them, for the animals, and for the environment, but it's also about opposing this terrible plan that the government is putting into effect, which they see no value to at all. And in fact, we have early indications that Correctional Services Canada is having trouble getting prisoner volunteers for the program and building up the barns. They've had to outsource some of that work, as far as we understand it. And we are pushing for prisoner non-participation in the prison farm program until it is a program that does not exploit anybody. We want the prisoners to have a voice and to say, no, this is not what rehabilitation looks like.
And are they current, and sorry if you've already covered this, I'm just thinking of other things as you're talking a little bit, because this is such a huge topic. Are they able to say, I don't want to do anything that harms animals, or do they legally have to do what they're told?
This is not forced labor. No prisoners are going to be forced to participate in the prison farm program. Otherwise, if they were forced, we would have nothing to do with it at all. We just do not believe that prisoner labor should be exploited.
Oh, no, I meant the prison farm program that's planned, where they would be harming animals, not your plan. Yeah.
Yes, well, of course. So with the plan that is being put into effect with the goat dairy and some cow dairy as well, they could volunteer for different aspects. They could volunteer to be working in the fields and the farms. It's unclear as of now whether they can choose which assignments they would receive. But we also know that there are some prisoners who are still working in the slaughterhouse at Joyceville Institution, and they receive incentive pay to do that. They get paid more. No prisoners are paid a lot for any of their labor, very small amounts of money, but the ugliest jobs get the most pay, the jobs that nobody wants to do. There are also questions of whether prisoners can be penalized for not participating, because being a part of this program assists in their correctional plan and would help them move towards eventual parole. Mm. So if they say, I don't want to have anything to do with this because I don't want to have anything to do with exploiting or harming animals in any way, it could impact their correctional progress and their eventual move towards parole. So this is, it's wow. voluntary, but there are, just ethical implications to even a prisoner saying, I don't want to be involved in that.
Wow, that is a tough situation for them to be in. Do you have any idea if the food served in the prisons is, if there's vegan options for people? I know that there are some people that are advocating for laws requiring vegan foods in all government institutions.
Yes, well, that would be nice if those kinds of laws carried over into the prisons. We do know that the food quality in prisons is terrible. It's one of the number one complaints among prisoners. The food is awful, and it's just prepackaged. It's outsourced to a couple of food supplying companies, and there really are not vegan options. Even the vegetarian prisoners have trouble getting what they need in terms of food, which is basically just not having the meat on the plate, as opposed to actual substitutes of other products. So the food situation is dire in the prisons. And again, this with an evolved approach to the prison farms, we could be producing healthy plant-based foods for prisoner consumption, rather than using all of those prime acres of land to produce food to feed to large numbers of animals to be converted into milk and meat to go outside of the prisons on the outside markets. And prison farms were never used in the past to produce food for outside sale. This is brand new. So everything is changing, and the questions are not being asked. But if we were to take an evolved approach to prison farms, we could start to turn that around, offer healthy, affordable foods for prisoners that are fresh and healthy and tasty, and also teach prisoners techniques in food preservation and serving it in the prisons as well.
Mm-hmm. And you're not giving up, are you? You're just going to keep at this.
Absolutely, absolutely. We're certainly feeling the weight of things and the discouragement of things, but there is no stopping. We are pouring our whole hearts into this, and it's just about justice. It's about what's right and what's inevitable. The whole world is recognizing now the environmental implications of animal agriculture, the ethical implications of it. The world is turning its attention also to prisons and how prisoners are treated, because this is a marginalized, one of the most, if not the most, marginalized segments of society. In my description, I'm about, being a voice for oppressed species and gender minorities and racial minorities and mentally, economically, and physically disadvantaged. And among prison populations, these are the prison populations, people who are marginalized and mistreated. And the perceptions that we have towards prisoners behind those walls just needs to evolve and change. They're human beings. And if we care about, say, public safety, then we should care about the quality of person coming out of prisons and affording opportunities to come out with a greater capacity for empathy and compassion and personal responsibility in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And this goat dairy plan simply won't accomplish any of that.
Well, I mean, it's been heavily documented that those who are working in facilities such as factory farms have gone from being completely nonviolent, calm people to angry, violent people coming home and even abusing their spouses.
Yes, there's ample evidence. Like, if a slaughterhouse enters a community, the rates of violence in the community go up, in particular domestic violence. It is also criminogenic. Slaughterhouse work specifically increases the likelihood of crime and resorting to crime. It also results in higher unemployment because there's such high turnover. People don't last long in these jobs. It is just the wrong thing to be training prisoners to do. We have faced the objection from one person saying, well, the prisoners won't be harmed by animal agriculture unless they see what they're doing as being harmful to the animals. If they don't see it as harmful to the animals, it won't be traumatic for them. And our response has been, well, if in order for that to not be traumatic for them, would require emotional desensitization. And that's exactly the opposite of what we should be teaching in prisons.
Mm-hmm. Very good point. Do you have any idea what the prisoners are currently being paid when they're working in slaughterhouses?
An idea. I mean, it depends on how long they've been working, how far up the pay scale they've gone. The maximum pay is less than $7 a day. That's maximum pay, of which there are deductions. And, I mean, from what we hear from prisoners, they're lucky to make it out of there with $2 at the end of the day, which is really not even enough to make up for their extra appetite after all the hard work on the farms. So the prisoners really don't particularly want to be working on these prison farms. They don't see what they're getting out of it, which is all the more reason to provide a program that they can see what they're getting out of it and why.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much, Calvin. It's been a pleasure chatting with you, and we will definitely spread the message around the advocacy community.
Wonderful. Thank you kindly.
Okay, take care. Great chatting with you.
Take care.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
A new festival dedicated to highlighting the power of podcasting is here, Vancouver. Join us November 8th to 10th for the Vancouver Podcast Festival, presented by Doxa Film Fest. Vancouver Podcast Festival tickets and passes are on sale now. Centered around a true crime, true justice theme, the festival includes nightly shows at the Rio Theater, a day full of masterclasses, plus live shows and panels at the Vancouver Public Library and CBC. To discover more about the festival, visit vanpodfest.ca/schedule.
You're listening to Vancouver Co-op Radio 100.5 CFRO. We are a non-commercial station bringing you voices and stories and perspectives you probably won't hear elsewhere. We are supported by members and by donations. You can become a member by going to our website at www.coopradio.org. If you like what you hear but don't want to be a member, that's cool too. You can still help by clicking on the donate arrow at the top right of the website. Co-op Radio thanks you for listening and for helping build our community of listeners and programmers.
You know I need your love. You know that hold over me. As long as I got your love, you know that I'm
MPs spent their first day back in Parliament after Thanksgiving break debating the perils of climate change. The emergency debate was granted by House of Commons Speaker Jeffrey Reagan just a week after the United Nations climate change arm dropped an explosive warning. It bluntly said the world is on the precipice of major disasters if governments don't step up with a firmer plan to stop spewing so many greenhouse gases into the atmosphere. The world has already warmed up about 1 degree Celsius compared to the mid-19th century and is experiencing the effects of that, including more violent storms, more frequent flooding, longer droughts, and more forest fires. There's a groundbreaking youth climate lawsuit against the U.S. government. A federal judge on Monday rejected the Trump administration's last-ditch efforts to derail a landmark constitutional climate lawsuit brought by 21 youth plaintiffs, preserving the trial start date of October 29th in Eugene, Oregon. In a 62-page opinion, U.S. District Judge Ann Eichen denied yet another attempt from the federal government to throw out Juliana versus United States, which was first filed in 2015. The judge largely rejected the government's arguments, but granted the administration's motions to dismiss President Donald Trump as a defendant. The judge said the students can get what they want by suing officials below the president, but she left the door open for Trump to be reinstated as a defendant in the case, if necessary. Lawyers for the teens had argued the president shouldn't be excused for failing on his official capacity to protect the environment from rising global temperatures while subsidizing fossil fuel-dependent industries. The groundbreaking lawsuit targets the government for creating policies that encourage climate change and for violating the country's youngest citizens, their constitutional rights to life, liberty, and property, as well as failing to protect essential public trust resources. To suggest that our government suffers harm greater than its citizens by having to participate in a trial when its youngest citizens bring legitimate claims of constitutional harm before our Article III courts flies in the face of democratic principles, Julia Olson, Executive Director of Chief Legal Counsel of Our Children's Trust, said in a press release Friday. We're going to trial on October 29th. Beyond Burger became available in Canada restaurant chain A&W in July this year, but the company couldn't keep up with demand due to a shortage of plant-based protein, peas and beans, which are the main ingredients of the burgers. The consumer demand is clearly there, and companies want to produce these new products, but they need the raw material to produce them. Frank Hart, chair of Protein Industries Canada, said that is actually holding back food companies from moving forward on developing innovative products. Protein Industries Canada is attempting to address the gap between supply and demand through a $153 million grant received from the Canadian government's Innovation Superclusters program, a federal fund launched to support innovative business in Canada. The money will be used to fund innovative plant breeding and processing technology projects. One of the prospective projects is a breeding project aiming at increasing protein content in pulses higher than the current 18 to 20%. A&W confirmed that Beyond Burger is now back in stock in all of their locations. More news in the world of vegan food. Vegan egg replacer Just Egg will debut in Southeast Asia on November 1st, World Vegan Day, at Oasis Restaurant inside 677-room Grand Hyatt Hotel in Singapore. The mung bean-based vegan egg will be served as a patty inside the Just Egg sandwich, which features vegan cheddar, tomato chutney, guacamole, alfalfa sprouts, and dairy-free brioche bun. The sandwich launch will be supported by several promotional events, including a Just Egg food truck serving the new sandwich in the hotel's driveway and a vegan barbecue buffet at the hotel's poolside restaurant featuring the egg replacer prepared as futomaki sushi.
Thank you for tuning in today, everyone. You are listening to Animal Voices here on 100.5 FM CFRO, Vancouver Co-op Radio in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Please tune in next week, next Friday, October the 26th, for our World Vegan Day show. I am so excited to be having Fiona Oakes on the show. If you haven't heard of who she is, well, she's this amazing, amazing animal activist based in the UK. And there's actually a film that just came out about her last week, which is made by Keegan Coon from the filmmaker of Cowspiracy and What the Health. The film is called Running for Good, and it's a feature-length documentary about world record vegan runner Fiona Oakes and why she runs. She runs for the animals. She runs a sanctuary of 450 animals in the UK. So she's going to be on the show next week to tell us all about that. I'm so excited about that. Today's show is brought to you by Edible Planet, a Vancouver-based education campaign and TV series to teach people about the world's most powerful edible plants and the fascinating people who bring them to market. Food is the world's most powerful tool to share the wealth, end chronic illness, regreen the planet, and create lasting world peace today. Now is the time for a plant-based economy, because on our big, beautiful edible planet, the food we eat can change the world. Also want to remind everyone, it's day one of our member drive. Thank you to Leanna Picard, our first donor, and you can donate as well. Just go to cooperadio.org, click on donate, or you can phone 604-684-8494 if you like the work that we do here on Animal Voices. Now we're going to end you with the song Where Is My Mind by the Pixies. Stay tuned for an incredible environmental program, Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith. Thank you so much for listening to Animal Voices today, and remember to be kind to the animals.